20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's happening, everybody? My name is Matt, but you can call me Matub, and welcome to Pack-A-Day Podcast, a show where we talk about the Packers every single day. As always, I'm joined with my wonderful co-host,
Zachary Jacobson. I wouldn't call myself wonderful, but you know, I appreciate it. We went through hell trying to set this episode up.
I'm currently recording through a broken gaming headset. It's held together with painter's tape and hopes and dreams.
And I'm recording through a Samson microphone. I have had absolutely zero problems. Thank you, by the way, Maggie, for the microphone.
Oh, wow. Yeah, lucky for you. My normal, quite famous at this point, microphone on a boom arm is finally giving out. Turns out that $17 eBay microphones don't last very long.
Well, you made it last pretty long. Like, you got a very long lifespan out of that. So I commend you for that. I think everybody else does too.
I did. Yeah. And I will be able to reuse my USB interface, my boom, all of the other stuff. It's just, I need to replace the actual microphone itself.
Yeah. I can't relate. I mean, I'm pretty infamous for using Google headphones, or no, the iPhone headphones for 2-3 years now. And I guess Maggie felt so bad for me that she got me a headphone or a you know, microphone. So yeah, it feels good to be on top of the world right now.
Solid. Well, speaking of on top of the world, the Packers are currently 7-2, and we'll be finally heading home to go against the, I'm not going to say tail spinning Carolina Panthers, but the Carolina.
Yeah, well,
Panthers.
If you look at Twitter in the past week, dating back to last Sunday, then you wouldn't think they're on top of the world. In fact, you would think their entire world at 1265 Lombardi Avenue is caving in on them. Like, everything is just horrible. And the entire organization is just turned upside down and the season is over. But no, reality is, like you said, they're 7-2. They're coming off a very bad loss to the LA Chargers, a clunker. It feels like they have one of those every year. I could pull up multiple examples. I tweeted that last Sunday. It was just a game where they weren't focused. They weren't locked in. Aaron Rodgers said as much himself, and they just didn't show up to play.
Yeah, I mean, that's totally fair. But we're talking about a Chargers team that won 12 games last year. Like, the Chargers currently have a not great record, but every single one of their losses has been by one score. And the Packers have done very, very well in one score games. And that I'm not going to say that they got exposed, but I'm going to say that they're weaknesses were shown to the public.
This Chargers team reminds me a lot of the 2008 Packers. Their record was horrible, but all of their losses came, I think it was by 4 points or fewer. Like, there was so much talent on the offensive side of the ball and the defensive side of the ball. So you could say the same for the Chargers. Yeah, Keenan Allen, Melvin Gordon, and then on the defense, you got, you know, that great pass rushing pair of Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa. And like, this isn't some slump of a team. They didn't lose to like just a horrible roster, like a JV squad. Like, they lost to a really good football team that you mentioned. They were 12-4 last year. It's a good football team.
Yeah, they are a good football team, and they got absolutely boat raced by a good football team playing at home. So the Packers are going to be returning home, and they will be playing a good football team, and they hopefully are a good football team, so maybe we'll see the exact opposite.
Yeah, well, I mean, we can only hope. I mean, the Packers, they are going to be at home. They're going to be back at Lambeau, and I mean, it would be great to go into a bye week with a win against, you know, a team who a lot of people peg as a potential playoff team. You know, right now, I know they don't have Cam Newton, but they do kind of, you could argue they look better without Cam Newton, but they got someone who's in the running for MVP at running back.
Oh, God. So the last time a running back won MVP was
correct,
Adrian
2012,
Peterson,
I believe.
Yeah. And Christian McCaffrey, if you look at DVOA, he is not terribly efficient. He is just voluminous.
Yeah, he is making big plays happen. Like, he is ripping off chunks of yardage at a time. Big plays.
But he's ripping off chunks of yardage at a time, but he's also getting stuffed a lot. It's a very Barry Sanders-esque boom or bust kind of play style. And so the average fan that doesn't watch the Panthers is going to see the the highlight reels and they're going to go see his gaudy numbers and go, oh my God. But then it's like, okay, well, he had two rushes for over 40 yards and then otherwise had a bunch of 2 yard carries.
But the thing is, he can also be a factor in the receiving game as well. And that's why I feel like
it's
the best possible time for the Packers to get someone back like Ibrahim Campbell.
Oh God. Yeah. Like, so, I mean, how long have you and I been, actually probably since the start of this podcast, have used the term money backer over and over again?
Excessively, probably more than the average healthy person should.
And Matt LaFleur, in his press conference, I think it was Wednesday, said that the nickel linebacker role is a very important role in the Packers defense, and having Campbell back, he said that it was a carousel of people, I think it was the word that he used, and he said that now that Campbell is back, everyone else will get to stay home, like stay in their natural position.
Yeah, because you bring, that creates stability there, because they had guys cycling in and out on the back end. They were playing Adrian Amos in the box, and he could play there, obviously, but that's not ideal. You don't want him down there. You want him on the back end just to shore up your secondary alongside Darnell Savage. You know, and they've been having to rotate, well, Redmond back there, Chandon Sullivan, who has been a really pleasant surprise, by the way. But yeah, they've been rotating guys in and out. That's just primarily because they lost Raven Green. They didn't have Ibrahim Campbell, obviously, on the PUP. But now he's back in there. That just brings more stability, not only to, you know, the back end of the secondary. It allows guys to, you know, as he said, stay home, but that gives more flexibility down there in the box. Like if they want to go heavy against the run, they can go with PJ Goodson next to Blake Martinez, or they can allow Campbell to get in there and get some reps against the run, because he played really well against the run in his three games last year. He tallied, I think it was 20 tackles in three games.
Like he was a monster.
Yeah.
He was a big part in taking out the Vikings. Like he stopped the rushing attack. And Blake Martinez is a thumper. He's a tackle machine. He's I referred to him on Twitter as AJ Hawktinez.
I hate you so much.
I called him Blake J Hawktinez. That was
I remember so seeing that. Yeah,
he reminds me a lot of a mid to late career, like a post Dom Capers AJ Hawk, who is going to make the tackle. He's a sure tackler. It just might not be in the spot where you want the tackle to be made, where he'll make a 5 yard downfield tackle instead of a line of scrimmage tackle. However, I did get a bunch of people in my mentions that were very mad at the description, because Blake is a full on coverage blower, and AJ really never was.
Look, I think anytime you can,
I'm sorry. Anytime you start with a big sigh and a,
you know my feelings towards Blake Martinez, okay?
Yeah.
Look, anytime you can compare a white linebacker for the Packers wearing number 50 that plays middle linebacker to AJ Hawk, I think you got to do it.
Yeah, and the other thing is people saw that as I was trying to say, it was a detriment. AJ Hawk was a starter for a decade. I'm not saying it's necessarily a bad thing, but we know who Blake is.
Yeah, being compared to AJ Hawk isn't necessarily a bad thing. But I mean, AJ Hawk, obviously, you could say he maybe underperformed for a fifth overall pick. Sure.
And but I would honestly argue that he didn't. Like, he was drafted as a 4-3 outside linebacker. He was asked to play a 3-4 inside linebacker after a couple years, and was good to great for a big chunk, and was okay to good for most of it. And I think if you are a consistently not a detriment player for more than 10 years, sure, you're worth the fifth overall pick.
I agree. I just,
okay, well, I'm like, that always happens. Like, you and I end up with like yeah, that's it. Okay.
Well, I mean, you hit the explanation to a T. I really didn't find any fault in that. But you know, with Martinez, I mean, he shouldn't be asked to play in coverage, and I think that's why if they pair him with somebody who specializes in that aspect of defense. Like, that's why they drafted Oren Burks last year in the third round.
Right.
He was supposed to be that, like, he's a safety convert. He's supposed to be able to come in and kind of secure the middle of the field while Blake just plays downhill, plays aggressively. But now he's being asked to do a lot, and he's doing it with, exactly. If you look at it, what are you laughing at?
I said exactly. I 100% agree. But also, you know, Do you know when Blake played his best football this year?
When?
I mean, it's very on brand for you. He was playing next to Raven Green.
Oh, what do you know?
Like when you have a safety playing linebacker and is asked to be the coverage in the middle and Blake gets to play downfield, just like you were saying, he played very well. And it just so happens that the guy he played best next to is your undrafted free agent crush from last year.
My boy Raven.
Your boy, but just pour one out for Raven. That poor bastard asked to play. I mean, he weighs like a buck 85 asking to play linebacker.
And he had no fear doing it either. Like he stepped in there and he was doing so well. And that, yeah, to my point, when he has someone formidable next to him, that allows him to do what he's good at. And that's playing against the run, playing downhill and sticking his nose into traffic. And as early as last week in LA, he did that early in the game, even with one damn hand. It was early in the game. I remember one specific play. He crashed towards the line of scrimmage and he made a play. I think it was on Austin Eckler or it was on Melvin Gordon. I can't remember exactly, but he made a play at the line of scrimmage, something that Twitter tells me he never, ever does. And I remember because I tweeted about it immediately. I was like, oh, look at that.
Hey, excuse me.
Hey, guys. But yeah, and he does that a lot. And I know the narrative is he sits there at the second level and waits for the plays to come to him. And he makes the tackle. Like he's a sure tackler, 4 to 5 yards past the line of scrimmage, but that's not always the case. Just turn on the tape and watch it. He's not always doing that. I'm just
so
I'll defend Blake Martinez till the end of time.
So it's funny if we look at the opposite side of things. Everyone's worried about Christian McCaffrey, but it was I think it was Peter Bukowski who said on Twitter a few days ago he showed rushing DVOA of Christian McCaffrey versus rushing DVOA of opponents for the Carolina Panthers. And he said, yes, Christian McCaffrey is a monster. However, the Carolina Panthers defense makes every running back look like Christian McCaffrey.
Well, he does have a point. Like, I mean, even if you just look outside the DVOA, like they're 26th in rushing yards allowed per game.
Right.
Yeah. Like they're not good. So if the Packers really want to like kind of steal the show from McCaffrey at Lambeau, just feed Aaron Jones and feed Jamal Williams. Get them the ball.
Something that the Packers have done very successfully lately is use 21 personnel, which is a 5-second description for people who don't understand personnel namings. The first number is how many running backs are on the field. The second number is how many tight ends are on the field. And then that implies how many wide receivers there are, because you know that there's going to be one quarterback and five linemen. So 21 personnel means two running backs, one tight end, and then the remainder are filled with wide receivers. The nickname for that within the Packers offense is pony personnel. And Ben Fennell did a great article for The Athletic this week explaining how successful the Packers have been with pony personnel, especially in the pass game, because you have to respect both Packers running backs, not only as runners, but as pass catchers. And so there's this great screen where it was the touchdown against the Vikings for Jamal, where Aaron just took off on a route to the flat and pulled a linebacker with him. And Rodgers just stared him down to get the linebacker and the safety off. And then just turned and chucked to the right to Jamal, and Jamal ran in almost uncontested. I think that we're going to see a lot of pony personnel against the Panthers because they suck against the rush. And because they suck against the rush, they're going to have to respect it.
You heard it here first. Matub is predicting a lot of pony personnel.
Bow, 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 bow. So, anytime we talk about pony personnel, I immediately think of Genuine, that song, Pony. It's what comes to mind.
Yeah, yeah, thanks.
So, I mean, what else do you think are going to be the keys to the game here with Devontae back? A lot of people were saying, oh, you know, Aaron's staring down Devontae and it's making the offense worse when he's on the field. Look what they used to do, and then look what they did against.
Which is absolutely ridiculous, by the way. Like, that was not the plan. the plan wasn't to force feed Devontae Adams. It seemed fun to speculate that at first, you know, Sunday night when you're kind of rewatching the game for a second time and you kind of you realize like, hey, Devontae Adams had a lot of targets and they kind of strayed away from getting the running backs involved in the passing game. You know, maybe that was their plan, but then the week goes along and you kind of realize like, no, you come back down to earth. That wasn't a thing. The Chargers had a really good game plan for what the Packers were doing.
But that's also, just we have not in recent memory, actually maybe ever, seen both Bulaga and Bakhtiari get so thoroughly beaten on the regular.
That was ridiculous. Like, that, yeah,
well, Joey Bosa is top three pass rushers right now. Ingram has got to be in the top 10. So
yeah, top 10.
So watching two amazing pass rushers do their work and completely disrupt the Packers offense. And LaFleur said it himself that he gave up on the game plan and panicked.
Yeah, he did say that after the game. He said he had to do a better job of not panicking and sticking to what, you know, what they plan on doing. And it's crazy because Bulaga did. He was having a great season.
Right.
And it was just one of those days. And Bakhtiari, his year has been kind of like less than the typical standard that we've seen. He's been great, but a lot of penalties from him.
Yeah. Well, but,
you know, as far as getting beat, I mean,
he hurt his back very, very early on in the season.
Yeah.
And I would suggest that that's been a nagging injury and he can't plant and really get into his stance the way that he used to. You see him get stood up against power rushers in a way that we haven't in the past.
Yeah, you have to think like there's something there. Yeah. Like something there's no like, oh, he's just getting older, he's regressing finally. No. There's nothing like that. It's probably something kind of underlying that's lingering a little bit. But to answer your question about, you know, one of the kind of biggest things that, you know, could kind of sway the game, you know, one of the keys here, right? I want to reference a tweet from Zach Kruse a couple days ago. I think it might have been Friday, actually. We've seen all season, or at least last few weeks, how the Packers have bent. They haven't broken in the red zone. They've allowed opponents to kind of drive down the field and not get into the end zone, just kind of settle for field goals. To reference his tweet, the Panthers, as far as red zone touchdown percentages allowed, they're last in the league. Woo. They've allowed nearly 70% of red zone touchdowns. And the Packers, they're sixth.
Nice.
Just a little over 48%. So that coincides with the whole bend don't break thing that we've seen. Like opponents have been able to move the ball against his defense lately, like between the 20s. But when they're in the red zone, things kind of tighten up, and the Packers have been playing really good defense. But that's kind of the thing. Like,
so
you can't be bad between the 20s and just good in the red zone. You know, you got to be able to kind of maintain that same philosophy, yeah, all throughout the field.
So a couple things. One, fire Capers. Two, Tighten Up by the Black Keys is an all-time banger.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. It is. I agree.
And three, when you have, I'm not going to say poor safety play, but when your safeties are asked to do a little bit too much, you kind of allow teams to move. And when you're in the red zone, it's like having a third safety. And so I truly believe in bend don't break as a defensive philosophy, but only if you're not reliant on turnovers, because turnovers are not sustainable. They're just not. I don't care how many Bear fans were in my mentions all off season saying how turnover differential is sustainable. It is not. And so if you force teams to kick field goals on every single possession and you are scoring every other possession with a touchdown, yes, that 100% works, but it has to work in tandem with a successful offense.
I mean, we saw that against the Chargers. I mean, the Packers couldn't force a turnover to save their lives, and the Chargers had like, what was it, four field goals?
Five, I think.
five damn field goals.
So it was four
a turnover.
It was four field goals before their first touchdown.
And then they had another field goal after that.
I think so. Yeah, and at that point, yeah, the defense was completely gassed because the offense was going three and out like it was their job.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, turnovers aren't sustainable. I mean, the Packers, they were forcing turnovers like nobody's business early on in the season, but the last few weeks they've fallen off drastically, and I think,
well, turnovers, I mean, just like I keep saying, turnovers are not sustainable. You can't rely on them, and in the exact same way that you can't rely on a corner to drop interceptions, as many interceptions as Kevin King dropped, that meant that he was always going to be in the position and then ended up catching a few, in the same way that if you see a bunch of turnovers, eventually you're going to regress to the mean and you're going to miss. I guess, does that make sense? Am I making sense here? I don't know. I just wanted to talk about Kevin King for a second.
I mean, if you want to talk about Kevin King, we can start a separate topic. I mean, are you saying he's getting comfortable? You get comfortable with complacency, just the fact that you're there to make a play.
Well, so no, it's kind of a point of a regression to the mean, in that eventually Kevin King is going to catch an interception after getting three pass defenses that were actually just dropped interceptions. He's going to catch one. And in the same way that if the Packers get three turnovers in a game, they're going to get a game where they get zero. It's a regression. Okay, I mean,
I understand it now.
Football is not baseball, and that you can rely on it almost 100% statistically, but there are certain things that happen and you're going to regress. You can't have amazing outliers constantly.
Well, yeah, if you're on Twitter, football is 100% analytic driven. So,
oh God, don't. Okay. I'm
EPA. EPA.
I'm very big fan of EPA. I think it's imperfect, but I do believe in EPA as a decent metric to start off with. However, I was just discussing this with Paul Noonan of Acme Packing Company and Shepherd Express, that there are ways that we can make EPA better. In the way that if a quarterback throws a pick six, it is actually only slightly worse than if they throw a regular interception. And I figured that a pick six should actually be roughly equal to a regular interception, because you're not only losing your EPA of that drive, you are potentially wasting time with your offense and putting it on other people. So if you throw a pick six, you get the ball right back, and you can kind of fix that. There's problems with EPA is basically, before I get off on this huge tangent, but I do think that the stat heads get kind of crapped on, especially because you get guys like Ben Baldwin who focus in and completely ignore when stats and film are supposed to work in tandem.
I love the work Ben Baldwin does, but I'm not the biggest fan of using EPA as like the be all end all metric, right, of like evaluating, you know, quarterback play.
And it's and
like, I never will be.
Baldwin, hates talking about film until it makes his point. Like against the Chiefs, Aaron Rodgers had a dropped interception on an underthrow to, I think it was Geronimo. It was like in the first quarter. It was pretty badly underthrown by a couple yards. And then the Breshad Breeland dropped it. And Ben Baldwin posted a GIF of it saying something along like the narrative of like Rodgers receivers are dropping balls and blah, blah, blah. And everyone laughed.
And oh yeah, it was the deep ball.
Yeah. And I remember that. And then Rodgers throws the amazing touchdown to Jamal Williams. And I said, hey, why don't you GIF that, you douche? No. Sorry. I said, why don't you GIF that, you pompous douche? Because pompous.
That's even better.
Pompous is a very important modifier. Actually, it's kind of ironic. The word pompous is pompous.
It is, but in that context, it works a lot. Like like you mentioned the film and the analytics kind of working in tangent. You know, that goes perfectly with the word douche, I feel like, in that context. Like either word can't function without it.
So the film and the analytics say that the Carolina Panthers pass rush is still pretty good, regardless of their porous rush defense. Sounds kind of similar, doesn't it? So as of right now, the line is Packers -5. It opened at Packers -5.5. Over under is, crap, I just lost the over under, 47. So that means the, combined score of the two teams will be above or below 47. And Vegas thinks the Packers are the 5-point favorites, and because they're at home, that makes them roughly the 2-point favorites on a neutral field. What do you think about that?
I mean, I predicted Green Bay 34, Carolina 24.
Wow. That's a high number.
Yeah, I go well beyond 47.
What?
Well, not well beyond, but I went a little bit beyond there.
What if I said 27-21?
27, I think that would be fair.
So 20, that would be fair. I just 27-21 like, would put them 1 point over the over. It would put the Packers to cover. And that would mean that Carolina scored 3 touchdowns and the Packers scored on 5 possessions.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess you could say the Packers score on 5 possessions in my guess too.
Absolutely.
They just miss an extra point.
Which, I mean, I got to do the numbers on that. The current extra point percentage is like 94%, something like that. And Mason hasn't missed one yet. So statistically, he should. Not to, to like, I swear it's.
Why would you say that?
So it's at 95% right now. I don't know. I'm just saying, like, if Mason Crosby misses a extra point and the Packers lose because of it, I will do my comeuppance and apologize profusely. I will.
Well, yeah, I would hope so. Jesus Christ.
And if I cursed the Packers. Hey,
speaking of curses.
I got a new one for you. When is the last time that the Packers special teams was even mediocre?
I mean, like, mediocre would be well beyond what they are right now, right?
Currently, they are on pace.
Oh, let me answer. Jeez.
They're currently on pace to be the worst punt returning team of all time.
Oh, last time they were mediocre, I want to say at least last year.
I would say a little more before that. Like, let's say, I don't know, maybe when Jeff Janis was on the team.
That you're not going to do well in Wisconsin with comments like that.
Jeff Janis, after the Janis exodus to Green Bay East in Cleveland, Packers special teams took a nosedive, even after hiring Sean Menenga, a.k.a. Michael Chiklis, to be the coordinator. They got even worse. Then they got rid of their only good special teams player to Oakland.
which I will be very vocal about.
And it's funny. I was very vocal in the beginning of the season saying Trevor Davis should not be on the team, specifically because he was being used too much on offense. I believe in keeping a special teams gunner. Look at Bill Belichick. He keeps special teams only guys on the roster all the time. He believes in special teams. He's the greatest coach of all time. Maybe we should listen to him.
Mm-hmm.
So, curse of Jeff Janis. Mark it down. Pack-a-day podcast first to talk about it.
So you think... Okay, wait. So are you saying so until Jeff Janis leaving is the reason they're bad?
Yes. Jeff Janis leaving is the reason that the Packers special teams are bad.
Oh.
What? What is wrong about that take?
I just don't even know what to say to that. Any kind of praise for Jeff Janis, I'm just so over at this point. Like, after going through the whole Janis over Adams thing, the whole, you know, Janis is the next Jordy thing, just all of the Janis nonsense. Like, I'm just so over Jeff Janis. I'm so sick of hearing about Jeff
Janis. You have to remember that I was never that guy. I always believed in him as a special teams gunner and a potential deep threat. And that was it. I never thought that he was going to.
Yeah.
So I think it's very on brand for me to have a Jeff Janis take that's both reasonable and funny.
Your definition of funny is very morbid.
Oh man. Hey, why did the no actually that would be a very bad joke. So the Panthers special teams far and away better than the Packers. Panthers offense just as good, possibly better than the Packers. It McCaffrey is the straw that stirs their drink. And they've got a quarterback who is serviceable. Their defense can't stop the rush. However, their pass defense is passable. Packers, very similar team, except that they've got a tandem of running backs instead of one superstar. What do you think? You think it's enough?
I think it's enough. I think it's enough to drop 34 points.
You think it's enough to drop? Okay, well, so Zach thinks it's going to be a very high scoring game. I think it will be a very mid-scoring game. So I'm going to say Packers win, Packers cover, and the total goes under.
I mean, is 34 or 24 really high scoring? I feel like that's like an average NFL score, nowadays at least.
Maybe, but 30 points is still to me a lot. That's anytime you pass a 30-point barrier, that's an offensive whooping. And unless they really get it done on the ground. Yeah. So I guess I will concede.
I look at 40 as that.
If the Packers go over 200 yards rushing, I think that a score over 30 points is entirely possible.
Which they definitely could.
They definitely could. So
against
this. Yeah, I guess the more I think out loud, it's really not outside of the realm of possibilities. But I tend to be the kind of person who goes very conservative. But the current betting consensus is 57% on the Packers to cover. So that means the Packers by 2 field goals or a touchdown, at least. And Vegas knows, man. The currently, the Packers are 6-3 against the spread.
Well, I mean, Vegas probably thinks the Packers are also favorites to sign Dez Bryant right now. So, I mean, do they always really know?
Packers are 6-3 against the spread. So there's a regression to the mean bit there that I could talk about. Panthers are 5-3 against the spread. So this is going to be pretty good. It's funny, the Panthers record are 5-3. So that means that when they lose pretty badly. Yeah, so I'll take Packers 27-21. And Zach?
I'll take Packers 34-24.
All right. We'll see who is right next time. Next time on Pack-A-Day Podcast, when Andy talks about the post game tomorrow.
For what it's worth, I picked Green Bay last week 38-25. Oof. I picked Green Bay 37-30 in Kansas City. I was really close to that one.
Yeah, that ain't bad. That ain't bad. I think had Mahomes played, we probably would have seen a 40-point Packer game, because that would have been a real shootout.
Yeah, more than likely.
Well, folks, that's going to do it for us.
But
unless Zach wants to interrupt one last thing.
Y'all, I like to interrupt. I like to steal the whole vibe. Yeah, I think we're good. Okay.
All right, folks, that's going to do it for us. As always, my name is Matt, but you can call me Matub.
And I am Zachary Jacobson. You can find Matub at
Call Me Matub everywhere. You can also find me at Matub Lifts on Instagram if you want to watch me do some weak stuff.
No, he's not kidding. You can actually find him on Instagram at Matub Lifts, and he actually lifts. And you can actually call him Matub. That's his actual handle. Not kidding. You can find me on Twitter now at, what's my handle now?
ZA Jacobson, I believe.
Yeah. ZA Jacobson. That's my new Twitter handle.
I literally just had my buddy Jesse just asked me today what your new
handle was. Oh, yeah, I saw that. I didn't get a chance to reply. I'll reply after we finish here.
I got him. So that's cool. So shout out to Jesse Malachar for looking up Zach, wanting to get to Zach's timeline.
Yeah. It's not often people willingly want to follow me. I really appreciate that.
So follow me at Call Me Matub. Follow Zach at ZA Jacobson. Make sure that you follow the Pack-A-Day Podcast on Twitter, on Spotify, iTunes, basically anywhere that you can get your podcasts. And make sure if you follow us on iTunes to give us a 5-star rating, it really helps the show.
Are we good?
I think that's it.
All right.
All right, guys.
Catch you guys next week.
Have a great day and go Pack-A-Day.